Good morning on Tuesday, February 17th, 2015. This is Brian Madden, and you're listening to a BrianMadden.com live podcast. I'm in San Francisco, and sitting with me in our studio is Matt Heller from Browsium. Hello, Matt.
Hello, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing well. This is you've been here earlier, I think a few years ago.
Yes.
To talk about Browsium and browsers and all this stuff, which is actually really interesting. I want to, though, not forget Gabe, who's joining us via the sky from Omaha. How are you, Gabe?
Yep. Not bad. Not bad at all. I'm kind of sad we had to interrupt our conversation about Saturday Night Live and, you know, all the funny. What did we end on? You, the Fox sitcom and a kit. You get your very own Wayans brother to move into this conversation, because that was pretty fun.
Well, I'm just now to the point now where I'm starting to feel a little bit older, and I'm going to say that I am, because I remember watching SNL when it's the 15th anniversary. That's how I got into the show. I watched the 15th anniversary special. And I know Gabe's about that same time. Matt?
Oh, yeah.
I don't want an awkward tee-up question, but you've seen it since before year 15, right?
Oh, I wasn't there for year one, but I was pretty close. So it was funny. My wife and I were watching the show with our kids, and they didn't get it on a bunch of the sketches that they didn't get. But then we were talking about it later of we were the same age when we were watching some of that stuff, and we didn't get it in the same way either. And I go back to the original cast time frame, but it's still great stuff. I was watching a bunch on my iPad the other day.
But. Which you're able to do because you have the browser built into the iPad. Ah. Supports, the latest technologies, and YouTube makes a website, and Hulu and all that works with the browser and the iPad. So you have the browser compatible with the application makers, and it's a very popular platform, and it works out well. But that's not always the case in the enterprise.
it's rarely, if ever, the case in the enterprise.
So here's the thing. So today this is a sponsored podcast by Browsium, so thank you for that. And Matt, you're the co-founder and CTO, is that right?
I am the founder and chairman and, whatever title you want to bestow upon me. But I do my job and run the company and – yeah, get us going. So there's a whole host of people who actually do the real work and make our stuff happen. I come up with some interesting ideas, and they look at me and go, thanks, we can make that work. And our implementation guys who have to go on site and make the 1992 technology work for our customers, those are the guys that actually have to do the hard bits.
And that's what I want to talk about today. I mean, so I think a lot of people are familiar with Browsium maybe, but if not – I mean, if someone asks me what Browsium is, I say you make web apps compatible with sort of modern browsers. So you have this old web app, and you've got – it's an IE6 or some old version of Java or whatever, and you've got something – you have to keep a VM or a Citrix server to serve up one old version of IE for one old web app. You guys fix all that.
Yeah, so a little bit of our history – kind of that's where we came from, and I'll talk a little bit about where we are now, where we're going, et cetera. So I spent a bunch of years working with Microsoft, and part of my mandate there was to speak to the enterprise and developer and security audiences about how great the new IE technology was. I mean, Microsoft for a long time kind of let IE sit and be dormant, and then they made a huge recommitment to it in the sort of XPSP2 days to try to solve security, and then they were innovating on features in 7 and 8 and 9. And you can see where they are today with IE11 and Spartan, and they really have just continued to push the envelope, which is great. The challenge was people had built all that technology on the old stuff, and so Microsoft wasn't delivering the tools that customers really wanted with a silver bullet. They couldn't, and it was just not in their area. And so people went down the virtualization path and these others, and it was clear to me that there was an opportunity here to let's provide a tool set that lets people get past this IE6 migration hump. What we recognized back then was this wasn't just about IE6. It's a browser compat problem. It's going to continue to happen, and you see that now with IE8, 9, 10, 11. You talk about really old technology of IE6. We see more IE8, IE9, IE10 going to IE11 than we see IE6 anymore. It's really rare that we see IE6, but we do. It does pop up from time to time. And when we had a business built around that, that's great, but that's really not a business. That's a product. And what we were recognizing and why I started the company up front was nobody was out there focused on browser-based solutions. Everyone was looking at all these applications are going to run in the browser and I'm going to rely more and more on the browser. And there was a little bit of the, you know, how do I manage my web application concept, but it was really that they thought of the, you know, the application that lives inside the browser. So the permissions that go with it, how do I provision new users? How do I secure it? But they didn't really think about the browser as the application. You would think of how do I manage Word and how do I update it and things like that. But nobody really talked about the browser in that way. And that's what we're trying to be for folks, is the company that focuses on the browser as the application that you rely on. And that's why we introduced Catalyst, which is multi-browser management and the ability to deploy and properly manage users to have Chrome and Firefox and IE. You know, initially, the issue that customers would come to us was around, we want to deploy a new browser because we're stuck on this compat problem. And the answer right now, fast and cheap, let's just throw Chrome out there. But then all of a sudden they realize that users start using Chrome for everything and they call the help desk because some application isn't working. The problem is they're just using the wrong browser. So that's where Catalyst comes from.
And it doesn't help the fact that Chrome is new every 3 weeks or whatever.
Well, and that gets back to the first point where we're in our sort of flagship Ion product, which is the legacy browser compat stuff. It's not just IE6. It's not just IE. Every browser is going to do it. You can't continue to expand the code base and adopt new technologies and evolve the web as it needs to evolve and should evolve and still maintain this large tail of old technologies and old things. You know, there's a reason that Blink should die and things like that need to die, and you just can't continue to do it. I see updates from the Project Spartan team all the time talking about all the great stuff they're doing in the new HTML rendering engine and all the stuff they're killing off from MSHTML. So it's going to be great, but at the same time, the enterprise is going to look at that and go, okay, what do we do? You know, we want this new thing because it's going to drive our business forward, but we still need to run the business.
And as a quick side note, Project Spartan, for those who are not familiar.
So Project Spartan is the new Internet Explorer. It's officially unclear as to whether they're going to name it Spartan or Internet Explorer, whatever it is, but it's the new version of Microsoft's web browser, shall we call it that.
So this is with Windows 10?
It'll ship with Windows 10.
Yeah. Is IE 12? IE
Next.
Next. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So this is interesting. So already we're only 5 minutes into this conversation, and I think I missed a big point that you clarified, where I was sort of thinking as Browsium as a legacy web, you know, IE browser version, old versions of Java. That's even how I introduced it.
Yeah.
But really, as we send more and more apps, they become web apps, and now we've got different implementations of HTML5, and I do this, and this one does that, and does it on these platforms, all this kind of stuff. It's almost like this problem is actually becoming more of an issue moving forward, not less of an issue.
So I fundamentally believe that and agree with that. Otherwise, you know, we certainly wouldn't be growing as a business, and these opportunities wouldn't be expanding. They would be contracting, and we're not seeing it. And you know, we are seeing more and more challenge in understanding the landscape of things. And so you know, we've got some new products in the pipeline that are coming where people are trying to tackle this challenge of what have I got and what is it relying on, and you know, what's in this web app, and what do I need to make it run. And it's becoming a bigger and bigger challenge as stuff gets thrown up. I meet with customers all the time where the IT guys and to our does IT matter conversation earlier, but the IT guys will say, look, we're getting ready for a migration, or we're doing an audit, and we found there's 800 web apps running, and we don't know what they are or who owns them, because anybody can just throw a Surfer under your desk or literally just install something on a machine they've already got. And that business unit is up and running with their little app that they've got because they had a side project. And that side project becomes a mainstream thing that they rely on. And, oh, by the way, now there's, you know, a ton of SQL calls from all these other apps that they've got that are pounding on this thing. And they're going to hand it over to IT at one point and say, here you go, operationalize this. And they won't know what it is or who has it. And we see that kind of stuff where it's just so easy to do it internally. Then you look at all the SaaS things and that just everybody relies on it. I mean, this, you're here in San Francisco, and it's certainly a hotbed, not the only place in the world, but a hotbed of people can start up a great idea and throw it up and be on the web in no time. You can use Azure or AWS, and you've got worldwide deployment with no challenge. And IT has to deal with that, and business units have to deal with it.
We have an AWS startup, or pardon me, pop-up storefront on Market Street. It's like three blocks from here. Literally, they have ads on buses saying, come by the AWS pop-up store and free snacks. It says
what do you buy?
On the bus. It says that on the bus. And let's talk to you about your web app that you want to build.
Wow. I'm going to have to go there after. The idea of a web cloud pop-up store, that's just...
I think it's $790 markup. It's not far from here.
Doesn't Amazon have financial challenges? Like, it just seems like a brick-and-mortar store for a cloud service seems a little weird.
Yes.
It's right outside of Twitter, practically. I mean, I was going to say, it is, these are bus ads. I mean, so with the budget, really. Something, Matt, you mentioned the talking about sort of an audit. You know, companies do this audit and find out they have 800 web apps. I don't know how many enterprises really know how many web apps they have. I mean, because this isn't like you can't just install NetNanny and just like make a list.
Right.
But
is that still a thing?
I think it is. Yeah.
But I mean, if I'm an enterprise, like I'm a desktop admin, you know, I can run scans on what applications are installed on my my workstations, my users, and I can see what executables they run and you know, like sort of figure all that out. But how do I find out what quote unquote web apps I have? Because I can't just make a giant list of URLs.
Right. So I need to be a little bit careful here because this is getting into an area that we're going to be introducing a product, so we want to generate interest for that. We don't want to get too far along it. But you're exactly right in the complexity of trying to understand what you've got. The tools exist today to manage and harvest executable applications, DLLs, all kinds of things on a desktop, and I can tell you what it is. If I have a new hire starting in some division, it's very easy to say, okay, you know, they need all these applications installed, and I know I need to provision them access in AD to all these other things, and you know, pretty simple. But web apps have tangled web weave kind of things into all different pieces and parts, and so it's really unclear. And of course, all of that runs inside the bubble of the browser, and it gets interpreted on the fly as the pages get loaded. And so trying to take a snapshot of what I need this second is different from the next page, and it's a complex problem, and it's one that we are working to solve, and we're going to be delivering something later this year that will let enterprises take some kind of control over that and get that insight and information and inventory. So you know, keep an eye on us in this space, and we'll be talking a bunch about it. But you know, to your point of people don't know what they have, one of the first fundamental question that I will get oftentimes sitting down with a new customer is they will generally know that one of their things is broken, that they've tried it and it doesn't work. But more
you mean one of their
web apps.
So like they know something is broken. Like we had this web app, it's important. You know, we pushed out a new browser, or users are starting to use this new browser, and now this web app doesn't work anymore. Please help us fix it.
Right. So there's back up a step. So there's a couple of strategies that companies use. The what I call the leap of faith strategy, which is we're just going to push out the new browser and wait for people to call and complain, and that'll tell us what we've got and what's broken.
Let's call that the tech target strategy.
and so, you know, we can label it yours, and then you know that works, but it's exceedingly painful because the number of customers that call and say, yeah, we had to roll that back, and you know, or we're not rolling it back, but people are kind of stuck. Oftentimes ends up with multi-browser deployments because people got tired of things not working, et cetera. Then there's the other approach of they know what their mission-critical business app is because everybody uses whatever it is every day, you know, the feeder system. And so they're used to that, and they've looked at it and gone, oh, yeah, that's not going to work. And so we know that's a problem. And then there are the companies that say, we have no idea. We just, you know, we know we've got a bunch of apps, and we think we should start testing, but maybe there's a better answer, and they're just not sure where to start. And so they kind of come to us and say, "What do we do first? And you know, what's the best idea?" And they're kind of paralyzed with fear. They remember what it was like when they went off of IE6 to IE8, or they remember what Windows 2000 and all that craziness was about. Having a conversation, talking at the beginning of this about, you know, how we're feeling older, and a conversation probably last year, maybe 18 months ago, with a guy who said he looked around when they were talking about their Windows 7 migration and realized that nobody in that room was around in the company when they did their Windows 2000, you know, nightmare kind of work. And so he kind of realized that's why everybody was a bit more cavalier and gung-ho about it, because they hadn't gone through that pain. And he said, it, you know, you look around and most IT shops don't have people who remember that and remember the last big desktop migration. I think we're going to see a change in that in IT, because things like, you know, Microsoft, I think you were talking about it, or maybe it was Gabe, that I think it was actually Gabe in New York a couple weeks ago, that it was every other operating system from Microsoft is a success.
Yeah, that's a Gabe thing.
That's a Gabe thing. So, you know, that we're going to see that now with Windows 10, and people are going to adopt it. We definitely have customers that are on Windows 8, one or two on Windows 8, most on Windows 8.1, but still, you know, we're going to see the Windows 10 adoption stuff. And the whole strategy behind Windows 10 as an operating system in and of itself, and the way it's going to enable organizations, I think, to more rapidly adopt. And what we want to provide is a way for them to have that pivot capability in on the browser side, as opposed to abstracting out the other. And I think you're going to see a mindset change of the IT folks from where they are today of it's just this colossal effort to get through a migration, and then we kind of live with it the way it is for a long time and just patch and patch and patch, kind of the way we do with highways and bridges in this country at the moment. But we're gonna see a big change on that. And I still believe that the tools aren't quite there. We know that our Ion tool has helped customers have gone through migrations from not one operating system to another. They've gone through that operating system change, but once they're on Windows 7, for example, they've gone to Windows 7 IE8 and then IE10 and IE11. So they've seen that we can help enable that. And I think that's going to be more of the IT problem in the next 2 years as Windows 10 adoption starts to become part of the discussion.
You mentioned the name Ion and Catalyst and some other things. I want to dig into some of these in a little bit. But sure. First, let's take a step back. So I'm a Windows guy, but I'm a desktop guy. But I'm an SE. I'm not a developer. So I don't even know, like, what breaks exactly with web apps. You know, when it doesn't work, I'm curious, you know, because I know I can use an app and, like, I have to use this one in Safari because the menu is not clickable, and, you know, like little things like that, right? Or like there's some plugin that only has Chrome, and so I got to use that. But is this the kind of stuff that breaks? I'm curious about what breaks, and then specifically, just kind of like behind the scenes, what's actually going on, and why does this stuff break in different web apps and everything?
Okay, so an easy question, a really hard answer. There's
my job is done.
There you go. Well played. There's categories of broken. There are things like you talked about with the menus not working, and that's really either different implementations of CSS or depending upon how the pages are built in HTML. So it's the layout and rendering stuff that things aren't where they're supposed to be, or they're shifted off by a little bit, and that's an important aspect of levels of broken. You know, if a button's not where it's supposed to be. And as a designer, you go, okay, you know, I want this button to be 22 pixels over to the left, and I need the padding to be this. And they get that. The rest of us just see it's a button and it's floating on the screen. So in the next version of the browser, if that button is 3 pixels over, the developer's freaking out and unhappy, but it works. It's fine. And there's nothing wrong. The problem is if it's 5 pixels over and it overlaps with another button, then it's really broken. And so we look at any of the automated tools that try to tell you whether your app's going to work or not. That's fundamentally one of the biggest challenges, getting sort of tying back to the question of, you know, where do we start and how do we know what's going to be broken. You can't programmatically know whether something's in the wrong place or not. There's a functional question. I could tell you whether the JavaScript is going to interpret or not. That's a different problem. But I can't tell you whether or not you can actually click the button to get to that JavaScript that's behind it. So that's kind of one is the layout and rendering pieces. Then we talk about the JavaScript elements. There's sort of simple stuff and more IE6 than anything else, but we see it from time to time. Application developers that we've seen some of these legacy things, they're so used to older browsers needing to compute in different ways that we see JavaScript that's written with all kinds of weights and timing built into it. And the newer browsers are fast, and so everything breaks because all the trigger points are misaligned. And so it's kind of simple stuff, but you got to go in and do it. There are other JavaScript pieces, the implementation of that specific JavaScript function was changed, or they've added new capabilities and changed the way that certain values and certain parameters are going to be implemented. So we see those kinds of things. So you know, what you wrote before is just misinterpreted now. On the larger stuff, and that's more typical large business and enterprise kind of thing, and the ERP, CRM kind of apps, they have dependencies on either third-party plugins or loads and loads of custom code that is just massively complex, that all of these little things add up to big, big problems. We see with one of the ERP vendors on a regular basis that the fundamental problem they've got is that their users are used to going through the workflow and you know, use the back and forward buttons like anybody would want to. Well, the back and forward buttons create a travelog event, and the travelog history gets screwed up by the new browser because it's sending the wrong sort of data stream back to the server. And so we see that kind of thing. And it just fundamentally breaks their business process entirely. So it runs across a gamut of things. The one category of things that we have ever seen that you know we just kind of can't fix or when you rely on third-party components that are just fundamentally not compatible with the new operating system. And if memory serves, we've seen that one time with a company here in San Francisco actually years and years and years ago. And they had you know, super old legacy technology that they needed. So we found another way past that of relying on it. But for the most part, we've got not even for the most part, we across the board have the tools and technologies that let you circumvent these limitations and go, okay, I need my JavaScript to function properly. Okay, we've got a way for either to adjust the timing or we can surgically remove the parts that are broken. A lot of what our customers run are off-the-shelf things that they've purchased and customized the heck out of. And so they can't go back and rewrite their code. It's literally replace it. And I was meeting with a customer a week and a half ago, and it's $16 million for them to replace their ERP system. And you know, does that really make a lot of sense to them? Because what they're going to end up doing, and I have this argument all the time with customers or discussion, not really argument because they agree, you could spend the $16 million. It's a lot of money. At the end of the day, that's going to get you exactly what you have today. That's going to work in whatever browser that you're using today. No guarantees it's going to work in the next version. And more oftentimes than not, as soon as you open up that Pandora's box of we're going to have this new version, somebody's going to say, wait, this is my chance. I want a new feature. Let me have this. And so then scope creep comes. And it's not $16 million, it's $18 million. And it's not a year, it's 5 years. And they just can't get these things done. So I like to occasionally sort of joke that I'm fundamentally lazy, but the idea for me should be that a business should look at it and go, we've got this working and it's the right thing for us. We can run a new project in parallel or we can pull these things apart. We can pivot when we want to as opposed to having to make these massive shifts of technology and you know that can break all kinds of other things. Let's take a lot of the risk off the table and let's really go in the direction we want. The other thing for me is that to a CIO or a business unit or whatever it is, we're trying to enable the situation where you can't make a bad technology bet Because sometimes you look at something and it's the shiny new thing and it's, you know, Web 3.0 and it's the thing you're sure that that's going to take off, but it doesn't. And so you've built a part of your business around this technology that either gets abandoned or just kind of gets put by the side of the internet superhighway. And you then have to figure out how you get back from there. And our approach is really to design to say, okay, you're going to make a bet. If it's the right one, great, then you're secured against that. But if it's not, you're not going to interrupt your business. And so we want to provide the tools that let you go in all these different directions, because I just fundamentally don't believe that anybody knows where the web's going to be in a year from now and what the new technology is. Somebody really smart is going to come up with a great idea that may have to break things or may have to change things fundamentally. And we're trying to give you this platform to get past those.
I mean, frankly, if someone knew that, where it was going in a year and a half, they wouldn't be managing desktops at some Fortune 500 companies. They would be a billionaire.
Right.
But, you know, this is interesting because as you're explaining that, it kind of clicked with me. Is that really you're enabling the true, you know, three-tier or multi-layer application design pattern, I mean, around, like, you're becoming the new sort of presentation logic. You know, when you break, like, I guess call it, you know, client, like, whatever, the back end, the data tier, the business logic tier, and then the presentation. And whether it's an ERP system or any of these big systems, if it has all this, it's like, oh, it's web front end, so, you know, the presentation tier is, is, quote, just a browser. But because of all these things in there, that sort of becomes really part of the business logic layer that you can just now divorce yourself from and say, okay, so you can leave all that, whatever you need to do, and now you can make, you know, we can make it so it works on whatever browsers or whatever, you know, platforms you need.
So you're completing the dream, because that's why everybody got into that to begin with, was like, oh man, all we have to do is put this in the browser and then we don't have to worry about, you know, the OS
client side requirements and
or an update breaking everything. And then, you know, it took a while, but we learned that is not the case. Now everybody's sort of disillusioned on that whole thing and looking for something else, but that's all really expensive. But here's something that can fix that and kind of complete the vision.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I mean, and you know, we often, you know, the marketing guys will kill me for saying it this way, bandy about the future proofing kind of name, but that's really what we're trying to enable. You know, if you look at a web app and say, okay, I'm going to put blinders on and only think about this application and this application's needs for security settings or system settings or APIs or any of these other pieces, what do I need to make this work? And I'm going to do the best of breed for my answer and make that work. And then I shift and look at the next web app and go, okay, what does that one need? The promise of the web was that you don't need to think about that, but the reality is to build these business apps, and I'm not talking about consumer apps clearly, but it, you know, these business apps, they have very specialized, unique functions. You know, what HR needs to do is fundamentally different than what the guys in finance need to do on a daily basis, and you know, similarly in marketing. And for them to try to sort of use a common platform is a great idea, and there's a lot of smart people who can make some of those things work. But there will always have to be some kind of compromise. So if this is just in order to make it work this way, we got to do this. And you know, we even see that on tools that we use on our CRM side. It's sort of a, you know, sales guy saying, "Well, I want the click-down menu to have this function." Like, we can't really, because we have to map it this way, and those kinds of things go on. So by trying to remove the dependencies, as you were pointing out, we're giving you the ability to manage the uniqueness of that application. I'm not trying to endorse the idea that we break apart the web and make everything super specialized and don't go to standards. Standards are hugely important, but you shouldn't have to try to map your application to a set of needs that aren't the best for that. And when years and years ago, when I was a programmer and a horrible programmer at that, but I worked for a guy whose approach was, let's look at the problem and then let's look at the technology landscape and pick out the best technology to solve that and let's implement that, rather than saying, well, here's what we have today and I got to make that square peg fit into my round hole, because it inevitably just causes all kinds of things to break and everybody get frustrated. So that's, I think, a lot of what we're trying to help optimize around.
So are you a square peg rounding machine? Is that like you're taking the edges off that square to put it in the round hole? I mean, marketing definitely doesn't like that, but you know, we are using this thing that's not designed for a modern browser. We're taking that and making it so that it works inside the modern browser.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, so if
you're a lathe,
right? We're a lathe. If you think about that Fisher Price tool, that toy that kids have, this sort of dates me and puts my perspective on things.
You know, I had this.
So it's got the star hole and then the round one and all. You know,
did you have the wood one or the plastic? Because that's how you date yourself. If it was made out of wood.
Yeah, mine was made out of wood, and my Fisher Price guys, oh,
steel,
cast
iron.
And you know, so we're providing the ability to make your square fit into the star and all the others, because that's what you need to do.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good analogy for that, the way you kind of put that together.
So you talked about sort of the approach of the way that applications kind of break and the different sort of technologies and the way that you can sort of approach, like breaking it out and using best of breeds here and there. I want to start tying it back to sort of like how you guys exist as a company. Because obviously this is your area of expertise and you and your co-founders and you're doing things like this. So how do you actually bring that to market? Like, you've got these different technologies and techniques and things that can be done to make certain applications work in certain browsers. And I don't know if it's browser... I don't know. I'm sort of curious on what you actually do.
So do you mean how do we do what we do, or
what do you do? Let's start with that. Yeah.
So like when we go into a company and their web app is broken, how does our tool help make that work?
So you sell a tool. Let's start with that. You're a software company.
Right.
All right.
So we'll go to a company and their XYZ app is broken. Typically, I'll talk about the sales process. So our sales guys will get on the call and do their thing and show our demo, and it's all wonderful and exciting, and everybody loves it. And they say, okay, well, make it work for me and what my stuff is broken.
Because the demo is just, oh, this broken app. Look, it's not broken. Huzzah.
Right. Hey, look, I showed you working. Now buy. And so our implementation guys will typically get on a GoToMeeting or a call or WebEx, so that we don't prefer one company over another. They will take a look at the app, kind of see what's fundamentally broken. What we want to do is have a customer say, look, I've got this problem that's broken, and here's a part of my business workflow that I can show you that's broken, and we'll make that work. And we want to show you the one thing, sort of the teaser kind of bit. And so the way our technology works to get in there, and I think your example before of how we're disintermediating the multi-tier application model, we are a plugin that sits inside the browser, and we look at and work in the data stream that goes between the browser and the server. And so this provides a bunch of capabilities that you otherwise couldn't do. The biggest one is there's no company in the world that can do a overnight deployment of some new browser or some new technology. So we enable the fact that we have customers that have 100, 150,000 desktops. It'll take them a year to go through. Then not that they're slow. It's just that's a lot of work, yeah. And you got to do it. And so you can't have your older environment and older desktops running along with your new ones, because you're either replacing your server and that's not going to work, or you're going to run the two in parallel and constantly try to sync them, and all kinds of challenges there. So our solution enables you to just continue to run your back end in the right way and make that happy. We also get a little bit of the architecture of it. So there's a plugin that sits inside the browser that really doesn't do much other than just monitor the URLs that you're going to. We're sort of an opt-in model, if you want to think about it that way. I'm kind of getting out of order here. So you have a web app that's broken, and you have a URL or structure around that URL, and you say, when users go to this URL, I want to load it in a specific configuration. That's what I need. I need these kinds of things to happen. So our plugin looks at it. It sees that URL match and goes, okay, stop the browser. I'm going to open a new window that has the configuration you need. By opening that new window, we can change the security context. We can change the third-party extensions, the Java version, any of those elements, and we can make that run right over here. And we're not doing it with the sort of standard virtualization and infrastructure server. It's all happening locally on the client. We're using Internet Explorer. We're not building a custom browser. So everything you've got is right there. The vendors still support all their stuff because it's their native code, et cetera. And so we then will load that site in the browser as it's configured to your needs. And you can flip over you've got a browser window that doesn't have those same configurations because you're going to browse the web with it and you want it to be super locked down and running the latest version of Java or no Java or whatever it'll be. Does that help?
Yeah, and so I, from the user standpoint, your plugin, I guess, works on all platforms and browser versions.
For us, it's a Windows world at the moment. We're looking towards the Mac and other things as it matures and realistically as it becomes a customer demand. I think in almost 5 years, I've had two customers say that they need a Mac version of something. Nothing towards you in the Mac world, but the world for us is a Windows platform. So any supported version of Windows. As well as the browsers, we work in IE8 and above. No reason to support IE6 because people shouldn't be running.
That's the whole point,
right?
You bring IE6 support in via your sort of new environment.
Exactly, right. So there would be no reason to.
But yeah, so I got a plugin, and that's the key. So the plugin is just looking at the URLs, and then based on the rules you set up, then it sort of builds. I guess it can be just in a new tab or a new window or
a new window. Yeah, we got a bunch of feedback from customers who used to do new tab. And we got feedback from customers that they actually wanted separate, and so we kind of went down that path. And it's a better context. So if we work around the concept of profiles, and so you build a profile for a web application or a suite or a set of web applications. And so if you open a window that has that profile, and when we open that dynamically, the user doesn't do anything. If there's five different web apps that need that same profile, they'll all reuse that window in different tabs. So it's
right.
Like goes with like in our model.
And then that different that profile is what has – because you can change out rendering. That's where you're changing out the rendering engines, plugins, you said Java versions.
Yeah. So the base unit would be the rendering mode. So you can render as IE5. You can render as IE7, 8, 9. We worked with some of the folks at Microsoft to build what we called adaptive IE quirks. Which is as similar to IE6 as you could get. It's really a logic engine that IE6 had a lot of quirkiness, shall we say, around the way it chose to render in quirks mode or standards mode or vice versa. And so we've emulated that logic in our adaptive quirks mode.
Because you can't just run – I mean, IE6 is just a nightmare, so you can't just run – IE6. You can't just like run an IE6 DLL or whatever because you don't want IE6.
Well,
just want it to behave like IE6.
Right. So you can't run it first and foremost because it's IE is part of Windows and that comes with XP. So you can't move that across. And then there's just the whole other security nightmare of trying to run that, et cetera. And so our approach also carries forward the goodness of the newer versions of IE in terms of security and performance and all the other wonderful pieces. So we don't want to bring forward any legacy bits. We're all about controlling the environment and the experience rather than trying to bolt technology together in some sort of Franken browser kind of way.
And can you force certain browsers for certain apps? Like if I'm a user and I want Chrome, but I've got one work app that needs to be an IE, can I ask for that URL and it pops open?
Yeah, so that's our Catalyst product, and so it is to be a catalyst to enable you to deploy those. Look at that. Some are punny. and so exactly that scenario where you want to say, we by default everybody uses IE, but we've got some SaaS application that needs Chrome. Or Google Docs or whatever it'll be that runs better in Chrome. But we want to manage it so they can't get to the wrong place. So the example I gave earlier where the user, they deploy multiple browsers and they get stuck in an app that they're trying to load some IE-based app in Chrome, they call the help desk. And Gartner will say that's $150 per user incident between the cost of that and the work stoppage and all the other stuff. And it's just kind of silly. And even today, I call various customer support groups and airlines and things, And they'll always end up with some kind of version of that answer of, oh, you know, I'm in the wrong window or I'm in the wrong
window. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so this Catalyst is designed to take that off the table. Now, the sort of visionary thing for Catalyst and the multi-browser management, and one thing I like to tout because I think it's an undiscovered feature in the product, IE has always been a very popular browser for enterprise, not just because it's built in, but it has this concept of security zones. And so I could load different sites with different security context based on my preferences.
And that's built into IE.
And that's built into IE, and that's just kind of the way it works. And Chrome and Firefox don't. They're just not built around that model. They don't have that capability. You can actually do that using Catalyst. You can say, I want to load Chrome with this security context for these sites. And we do allow you to map it back to what the Windows security zone. So you could actually have the same idea and say, when it's a internet site, I want to load Chrome with my internet security zone settings, the kind of idea. We can do that.
And does it pull those out, those actual security zones out, so you can deploy those out via group policy, or I guess you've got your own management?
You'll have to do a little bit of work to map those across, but the idea is that you can leverage that same security zone model using Catalyst in the enterprise. And so that's something interesting and unique, and we've had a couple of banks that have said, you know, when we have an extranet partner and we use Chrome for that, but their security policy is different than we want as our default browsing the internet security policy. And without Catalyst, they can't do that, really. There's just no way to load those two different versions. You could virtualize everything, and they didn't want to build that infrastructure. And so we provide it just sort of out of the box and as browser plugins, and off they go, and they've got it.
And when you say virtualize that, I guess that could be either way. I mean, that's sort of the alternative to this is either app virtualization, like an app via thin app and sort of packaging up the whole browser, or just good old-fashioned seamless Windows app publishing from a XANAP server or something like that. Because in our industry, in sort of the desktop virtualization world, that's kind of our default go-to. Like, I've got this one app that requires, you know, this version of this browser with this thing. Okay, that's an app V package now, and I'm building the perfect Firefox with all the right plugins and versions that I need, and I'm zipping that up and pushing that down as a you know, sort of desktop app.
And you know, I don't want to offend all of our friends and partners at the various companies. So you're looking around to see who I'm offending, but
I'm looking around to see if I can. No, I was going to say before we were about offending people, I was looking around for a copy of the VDI Delusion that we wrote. So, because I was saying, hey, you don't need this app virtualization. You're like, well, I don't want to offend anyone. I'm like, don't worry.
Don't worry. Oh, sure.
Yeah, it's already been done.
Been there, done that. So, you know, from
– they know who we're talking about.
Virtualization makes a lot of sense when you have a big problem to solve. The browser clearly is a big problem. That's why we started a business around it. But a customer at one point, I think, gave us the example of it's like using a sledgehammer to crack a walnut. You know, it'll get the job done, but it's really messy and just doesn't make any sense. And even last week, I was on the call with a customer, and they have used AppV extensively for all these packages. And so their answer is, look, I've already packaged all this stuff up. They have some compat problems, so we're talking about Ion. And the guy is showing me what he's got. You know, when user needs to launch application X that needs this AppV package, you go in and you do this. And you know, there's 40, 50 different packages of Firefox. So as a user, I'm expected to go back and forth and know which window and which Firefox to launch and IE to launch. And
then I click a link and I can't click that link out of my email. I have to actually copy that and then go into this other thing and it's in the start menu. And then a version of Firefox is updated and then I have to repackage 40
different things. And you know, I get why that whole world exists, and I understand where they're coming from, but it just seems like it breaks very, very quickly as a user. And we've got loads of customers that looked at our software 2 years ago and said, no, you know, our virtualization guys say we got this, you know, we've got loads of capacity, we've got all kinds of things. The number that have come back, it's not 100%, but it's pretty darn close. The users have revolted. The CIO and CTO, they can't afford it anymore. And so they're looking for a better mousetrap, which is not just what we're providing, but we're providing, I think, so much more beyond that. It, you know, virtualization is a good technology for lots of problems. I think in the browser problem, it is the wrong technology to use. So some people are using Catalyst as an enabler for, okay, we've app virtualized everything. We're just going to use Catalyst to do all this redirection so that the users don't have to know which one to go to. Great. Okay. So we can help solve that problem, but probably don't want to get into that problem to begin with if you can avoid it.
I was going to say, I apologize for interrupting. It's sort of a slippery slope where, we've made the investments in AppV or ZenApp or whatever, and it's like, it was just this one app. Like, this isn't maybe the theoretically best way to do it, but we already have this infrastructure. I'll just, like, tag one app on the side to this project, and then it's two apps, and then it's three apps, and then it's, you know, and then you end up, as you say, you got 40 different, you know, published app and AppV packages to do all these different URLs.
Yeah, and we see that everywhere. It's an easy process once you've started it. And it makes sense, but where it becomes a big problem is when the cost of maintaining those escalates and the support and infrastructure and all the other pieces are expensive. And then you end up with the flip side is the user experience from what we hear. And we're obviously biased because people come to us with problems. They don't come to us and say, everything's great here. You know, we don't need you. But we see it as a major, major sticking point for end users.
Now, so you mentioned, I think you alluded to two products, Catalyst and Ion.
Yes.
Is that right? And do you have, so these are, there's a Browsium Catalyst product you sell, a Browsium Ion product you sell.
Correct.
Are there other products?
There's a third product that is coming later this year that's the sort of business intelligence analysis inventory tool that we talked about a little bit earlier that we're in the process of building out.
So explain, because as I said, you sort of alluded to these, explain what Catalyst is and what Ion is, and do you buy both, do you buy one, how does it work?
Right. So Catalyst is multi-browser management, and it's the idea that I have Chrome, Firefox, and IE, and I want to deploy them to my users and avoid anybody ever calling me and saying something's not working. And because I can, as an IT admin, I can set a policy that says this site always opens in this browser and the user can't get past that. It's just going to force it on them, and the window will pop up.
Like, literally, I type that URL into a different browser, and it opens up IE, and it just doesn't show up in Chrome.
Correct. And so you could have a little window in Chrome that says you're being redirected, or you could customize it and say, you know, why don't you listen? Those kinds of things. But that capability is the whole core of Catalyst. And then when you look at Ion, there's two main uses of Ion. There's I have a legacy web app compat problem and I want to make my old run in the new, and that's what Ion was built and does. And then we have a subset of our customers that only use it for Java management. So that's not a compat problem for them. It's a security problem. It's a Java management problem. But the tool does both pieces. And so they will run 10, 15, 20 different versions of Java and say, for this web app, I want to run IE with that version of Java. And for these others, I want it to be here. And by default, I want to run the latest and greatest.
There's X amount of risk with each version of Java, right? And then so they – rather than run – well, there's two issues, right? So there's security issues with each different version of Java, and then there's also application compatibility issues with each version of Java, right? So this helps them with the compatibility and then also mitigates the amount of risk that they have to take on by using, say, an older, more insecure version on a newer app. Even if it might work, they don't have to worry about using this insecure version for everything.
Exactly, exactly. So sometimes I'll get brought into a conversation by a security team saying, we need to mandate this version and we're unhappy with all these insecure versions. Or it'll be the business people saying, our security guys want us to upgrade, but we've tried it and it doesn't work and we need to be able to target this specific version of Java. And we isolate it in a way through defense in depth between our model, the Java security model, as well as the IE security model. All these different pieces add up together so that legacy insecure version of Java is parked off to the side and other web applications can't get at to it and malicious sites can't load it. Only those sites that are configured and approved by IT can actually load that up. We could even get it so that the system doesn't even kind of know it's there if you wanted to go that far with it.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't recommend it because it's extremely slow performance, but that's a Java loading problem or anything else.
And so that's going back to Ion. So, I mean, it's what's fundamentally – Ion's what you described earlier where there's a plugin and then it applies to different profiles to how the whole sort of browser environment is built.
Yeah.
And then that's just – that's the technology. You can use that technology to either make things – you make legacy apps work or just to manage the Java versions and the security and everything.
Yeah.
Do you have to push out different Java – I mean, I don't – I'm not a developer, so I like – because Java, I know you had to download in the old days, like it's like from Sun, and you have to download this and install this. And do you sort of bundle that up and push that down, or is that, I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, so we don't bundle anything with our product. And so when you push out our product and it's a simple MSI, just back up a little bit. There's two components for Ion or Catalyst. There's the end user browser plugin component, and then there's the administrative console. End users don't get the administrative console, so you just deploy the end user package, and it installs the plugins to the browser and our own little monitor process and controller process. The controller process is what tells the browser how to open and what it needs to do, and the monitor process keeps track of the controller process to make sure that if the controller process stops, the monitor kicks it. So all very, very lightweight, super low-end processes, so we're not taking up memory, so they scale very well, et cetera, et cetera. The configuration needs to be read access to that user. So you could put it on a web server. You could put it on a file server centrally. You could push it down. That's kind of up to you as to how you want to get that configuration there. But we can pick that up at the end user, at the end point. From the Java example piece, we are expecting that those bits are available on the machine. However you want to get them there, they could be on a file server. They could be someplace else. We don't really care where they are. The proximity to the local process will make them more efficient and more performant, but that's nothing new or unique.
Yeah, I mean, in the enterprise, I mean, we have ways to get bits onto disks. That's not our problem. Yeah.
Right. And so we don't want to reinvent things. And, you know, it is kind of refreshing, I think, to a lot of our customers that we don't do infrastructure. And you know, there's no Browsium server you have to deploy and agents all over the place. Here's a client package. You push that down. It's an MSI, and it's pretty darn simple. So you could actually pick it up, open it, and repackage it your way. And you know, just plug into whatever you use to get to the endpoint, and that's kind of it. You know, you don't need to make this massive investment and stand up things. And you know, if you've got the 100,000 person company, you are clearly a global enterprise, and you've got all these regions. You don't have to worry about depositing things all over the place. You know, just use what you've already got, and off you go.
And then, so as people start to figure out how this fits into their own environments, you talked about your sales process a little bit, where you know, watch a demo. Yeah, it works. Here's my app. I mean, is it something where do you build these configurations for people? Can they? Is it self-serve? I'm talking from the admin side of things. Like, can they figure that out on their own? Do they need to be more web developers, or how does it? How do I go? Like, I'm you know, going back to me as an SE. I'm a Windows SE. I've got this app that doesn't work. Can I do this, or do I call you to do it?
The short answer is it depends. We have a large number of customers who do it all themselves. A lot of customers will try and start on their own. If you have a web development background, you're going to be more successful because you're trying to solve web technology problems. And you know, the more complicated ones on the ERP and CRM stuff where it's really complex bits, it's more efficient for us to help you and go on site and do it. You know, we can typically get you unblocked to the point where your QA process and QA teams or business unit teams, whatever, are going off and doing validation testing within a week. You know, so if we were to point you in the right direction or try to help you, it's going to take you a lot longer. So it's really about efficiency at that point. But we have loads of customers that do all these things on their own. And they buy support and maintenance, so they contact our team and we kind of point them in the right direction or help them out. Again, having the web developer experience and that kind of background is going to be most helpful. If you're really just trying to do Java management, you don't need to have much more than the ability to point and click because we have a wizard that just you select the version of Java you want, you enter the URL or regular expression pattern you want to match, and boom, you're done. That's it. And so those are really, really simple.
And do you run into issues? I mean, that can't be solved?
The one example that I gave earlier is the one that we can't solve, when it's relying on some component that speaks to a part of Windows as an operating system. So you've broken that barrier of the browser and you're actually an OS piece, and we can't do that. Now, there are times where ERP is a great example, where the customer is looking to go from XP to Win 7. The DLLs that they're trying to use aren't compatible. We can make use of the newer versions. There's a version of the DLL that's compatible with Windows 7, so we can use that version of the DLL in our process, and we can make it all work, so they don't need to completely upgrade their ERP system. But if memory serves, we have one customer where we actually had to help them rewrite that DLL. It was something they had custom written themselves. It wasn't complex, but it was just one of those of they were trying to call fundamental Windows APIs that just don't exist, and there was no shim available because they had been completely deprecated. And I would actually believe it was probably even Windows 2000 that was ported to Windows XP then to
Java. Yeah, and like you said, that's not a web app at that point. If I'm going towards, you know, if I require like this one DLL of MS Paint and it's not there, is not there, I mean, what are you going to do?
Exactly. So, you know, for us, if you want to kind of think of the window of the browser, once you've broken outside of that window, then we're kind of done. And so scenarios that customers talk to us a bunch about, not just Java management, but Adobe controls. And so like Adobe Reader, that still boggles my mind a little bit because I still don't trying to get my head around it. But there are certain PDFs that need certain versions of Reader, and we run into it from time to time. And so enabling that kind of thing where I'm going to go to this website and I want to open the PDFs in this version of the Reader inside the browser, we can do that. But if your PDF Reader is configured so that it spins open the Acrobat Read XE outside of the browser, well, we can't help you anymore because you've left that. And so that's a different kind of concept.
But even that, you start talking like app view packaging and you can build, build that.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a great example of where app view is the right technology for that, and we can hand off and coordinate and all that works.
So another question I have, and this is kind of taking a few steps back, but IE does some of this though, right? Because there's different like compatibility views. Like when I use, you know, Windows 8 now and I do want to load this website in compatibility view, like what is that doing?
Microsoft has kind of two technological approaches. In the shortly post IE8 days, they introduced CompatView, which basically let you flip back and kind of run in IE7 rendering mode. It solved layout and rendering problems of a certain type. In our demos, we used to show CompatView. Now we show the sort of newer approach, which is enterprise mode. And we kind of show what it can and can't fix in scenarios. There's a lot of things that enterprise mode can just fix, and we encourage customers, when you have a problem, use enterprise mode. Try that as your solution. Again, we're still in business, and we're doing more business than we've ever done before. Enterprise mode can't fix everything. It really is quite limited when it comes to any of these third-party controls, the ERP, CRM stuff that we see a lot. Some of the other bizarre design characteristics that we see, web developers will often, and even still to this day, do very, very specific version targeting. And some of the code that they use to version target, enterprise mode isn't able to handle. It just doesn't understand how to flip that. It's not looking for those pieces. And so we see those kinds of problems. And you know, we deal with large customers that have tried enterprise mode, and it hasn't worked for them. Across the board, it solves some of their problems, and I don't want to speak for Microsoft. I think it really, though, targets sort of the 80-20 rule, and that's great because a lot of the applications, 80%, are going to get fixed by it, and it's these more edge case 20%, unfortunately, that are critical business applications, and they're just super massive and big. And even the company that we had some guys working on site last week with a company, Microsoft had tried to get things to work in enterprise mode and CompatView and tried a bunch of things. They've been unable to solve that problem. I'll tout a little bit of our capability. The VMware guys were in there trying to use ThinApp. That's not quite working for them. Our guys hit the ground on Monday, and by Thursday evening, the customer had a working configuration, and they'll find some tweaks and other little bits in there. But you know, the problems that those other solutions just can't map to is really our sweet spot in there. And so we could get into the super specifics of enterprise mode that don't work. But typically, if you're in that case and the 20% where it's just not going to work, it's going to be too hard for Microsoft to build a tool that's going to be where you need it to be. And really, we exist there, and that's where Microsoft wants us to be, is to help on those scenarios that are critical to the business and need to be done.
Because I would imagine Microsoft is a big fan of what you're doing.
Lots of people at Microsoft are very big fans of what we're doing.
Well answered. I mean, because fundamentally, well, I mean, it's you know, if especially a lot of they have their reasons for doing what they did over the years and everything, and if you can sort of extend the lifespan and make all stuff work.
Yeah, I mean, again, the marketing guys aren't going to love this. There are those that think we're the devil because we're sort of extending, I think, misconceived notion that we're extending all this old stuff and just keeping the old cruft around. And the reality is we're not, because from the browser standpoint, people are still running – our customers are running IE 10 and 11. Mm-hmm. That's what we want them to be running mm-hmm. as of January 2016. They need to be running it to get support. We are trying to enable everybody to get to the modern platform. But then there are those business scenarios where it just doesn't make sense to replace this legacy application, and we talked about all that before. And so I think it's important for folks to recognize the fact that this is really about the greater good of getting people to the modern bit and being able to stay modern but really run their business and do it in the right way. And there have been a bunch of security researchers who have applauded us for being able to do this and the things that we're doing with Java and say, look, you're actually solving the real problem that other people can't quite do today and getting people to stop running the old stuff because they need to and going that direction. And you know, then you look at the Microsoft folks, Chris Jackson, the AppCompat guy, it often refers to the fact that we really fill in the white space that exists between what the browser's doing and what enterprise mode and all these other tools are doing. And it's a very needed area. And that's kind of why we continue to exist, and things like Catalyst and future products are really targeting all of that white space. But we are focused on browsers. It's part of the name in Browsium. You know, we live and breathe this stuff in a way that nobody else kind of does. And you know, we talked about virtualization. They built tools to solve a lot of problems, and browsers kind of get pulled up in that. But the devil's in the details of what we do, and the folks that we've got know, I'm sure, in many ways, too much about the intricacies of browsers and the way that things work. And you know, fortunately, we have good relationships with all the browser development teams, because there's a lot of stuff that they've done that isn't well documented or really well understood, and they do it for the reasons that they do it. And if you're not specializing in that area, you don't understand why this stuff wouldn't work.
Yeah, and theoretically, and that shouldn't be your job either. Like, right. I want you to be – I want someone with browser in the name to figure this out for me so I don't have to.
Right.
And so speaking – you know, we talked about Microsoft. I would imagine the other sort of traditional Windows app delivery vendors like Citrix, VMware, I imagine that from their standpoint, you're fine, because I can't imagine anyone really believes that this is – you know, if you're using VDI to solve your – browser compatibility, you talked about the walnut with a hammer. But what you do is compatible. You know, if you want to deploy this on a RDSH server, yeah. If I want to do it in a VDI session, you know, local, that's all fine.
Yeah, I mean, even last week we had a customer that uses AppV for everything, and they want to package it up and sequence it into an AppV package. Great, we can do that. I will have the caveat of we are not AppV and Citrix virtualization guys, so you know we need to work with you to fully understand exactly what you're trying to do. We don't do that for you, but you know we have other customers that have stuff running on terminal services or lots of Zen app all over the place that we see in Zen desktop and whatever the desktop. We don't care if it's physical or virtual. It's we're browser plug-in, so the browser's there. That's what we do. You know, that's the whole worldview for us is it starts and ends in that area.
So next steps for people listening to this and think, okay, I've got this issue. I imagine with a lot of customers, it's they've got this one group or this one app or this, you know, kind of one issue that's kind of the thorn in them. what are people's next steps? Like someone listened to this. Okay, yeah, this applies to me. Now what?
Yeah. So I before I answer that, I will take umbrage at the piece that the idea starts with I've got this problem, and what we're trying to help customers understand is, yes, you definitely do have that problem, but what we're providing you is the strategy for moving past this. So customers that come to us and say, you know, I've got 1,000 users, 10,000, 100,000 users that have this one problem. What we're trying to help them understand is we can solve that problem, but our technology solves so many other things. You actually want to have this across the board. So that's one thing that I think it's important for people to start thinking about is recognize the business trigger and the need for what you're going to do today and work with us. But there's more there.
Because I think people don't even know that this exists as a possible strategy. I think in a lot of cases, like, they're going to come to your door because they had that one problem,
right?
And it, I would imagine it would take them. It's like the same thing with Citrix back in the 1990s. You know, we used WinFrame to solve the problem of the poor performance on this one fat Windows app that we needed, and that's all we did with our first WinFrame servers. And then later on, we're like, you know, this kind of fundamentally changes the way I deliver Windows applications. But it took us seeing the first problem, solving that. Before it would click, oh, this is actually kind of a big thing.
Right, and I think, you know, we're going to have to pull out that soundbite because that's exactly the issue. And a couple weeks ago, I was meeting with a large bank, and they were very focused on the one problem they have for 5,000 users. And we go through the whole thing, and some of the security guys are sitting in there, and they say, wait, so you can actually solve this security problem that we have as a fundamental issue that we weren't even thinking about in this meeting. And so all of a sudden, the 5,000 users became all 55,000 users because this is a platform for them to do it. And so you're absolutely right. Until people start to play with it and really understand it, it's out there. But as far as getting started, you know, go to the website. There's a free eval to download. Are very nice. They really are nice sales guys. We'll contact you to kind of see what's going on. We'll want to walk you through a demo to show you what the product can do and to talk about what your problem is, understand that. Many of the things that you're trying to solve, we've been there, done that, and so we can either bootstrap you through a little bit of a proof of concept and get some of our folks who work remotely on it, or if it's more specific and in-depth, they'll take it from there. Nobody's going to pester you. I don't like downloading certain software because you always worry about the follow-on that comes from that. And so I make a big point on our sales guys to tread lightly on those things because I know how enterprise, certainly technology people can be when the sales guy calls you. But, you know, we can get you going. There's a bunch of videos on the website so that you can learn things on your own. And then, you know, our support team is there to help as well. And get you going. So if you've got the legacy browser problem and you want to modernize the platform and get your app working in the new version, great. Ion's your answer. If what's been most interesting and honestly for us as we've gone to the various TechTarget roadshow events, the Java management story has been very popular with that group. And so if that's what you want, Ion's your product. And lastly, if you're looking at the multi-browser management thing and saying, hey, I have this today and it's causing a problem, or we really want to do it but we were worried about this, then Catalyst is the way to go. You can download both, and they stack very nicely, so you could use both or use them interchangeably however you need.
And you mentioned sort of your experience, like almost, you know, so much of what your potential new customers see is stuff you've seen before. You're not a new company. I mean, I feel like it's
5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of these days I need to write a blog post about when is a startup no longer a startup? And you know, we think and act like a startup and all the stuff we do from an engineering standpoint, it's all startup
just
focused.
In terms of like rapid application, rapid iteration and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So we go through all that, but you know, we deal with some of these large companies and they want to do their due diligence on us and like, oh, you guys are that old, then that's fine.
Yeah, you're not like, we've been here, we're not going anywhere. Right. You know, as soon as there are no more browser and application and Java compatibility issues in the world, then we'll bow out. But until that point, you're safe.
Right. So it's good. You know, we were talking about before that it's good job security, and you know, we want to see things like Spartan and the new version of the Microsoft browser. We want to see that happen. We want to see Chrome and Firefox innovate and bring new things to bear because it's important to have that happen. It's great business for us, but at the same time, it really is the right thing for them to be doing, and we're here to solve those problems that that can sort of pop up and created by it.
Well, I think that's a good point, because people ask me a lot, like especially non-tech friends of mine, like why can't I use my, you know, 7-year-old laptop? I mean, if I just reinstall everything from scratch, it shouldn't be all fresh and work again. But it's again,
yeah, all I care about is email. That's what I hear a lot.
Yeah. But what we want to do today is not what they did 7 years ago. And you can't install 7-year-old apps and 7-year-old OS because of all the just lack of support and security issues and just not compatible with newer, you know, web apps and websites you want to go to. And if you load up all the current stuff, then the hardware is too slow. But I think fundamentally that's a key point, is the solution is not stop the clock, let there be no more new standards, make everything the same across the board. We want to allow innovation in web apps and technologies to keep on happening, but at the same time being compatible with the, you know, legacy investments that we made.
Yeah, we want to be able to freeze that point in time and say, this is what the world looked like and that's what they need. And that's great. So we can block that off and put it in a nice little bow and wrap it on the side. But everything else continues to move forward and sort of you're continuing to get the newest and latest and greatest, because right now, even in 5 years of the company being around, there are companies that are still kind of stuck because they can't move forward. And what we're trying to point out is we can enable you to freeze that, move forward, and when you get to another point where you kind of have to take that snapshotty type of idea, you spin that off and then you just continue to move forward and everything is just there for you as you need it.
It's like a shrine to the way the client web technology worked on the day you released your app.
Yeah.
We can make February 17th, 2015 web environment live.
It's Groundhog Day for the browsers.
Yeah. Groundhog Day. So we've got a lot of, let's see, Browseum, Groundhog Day for the browsers. So you mentioned you've got Ion, you've got Catalyst. There's a new product coming out. Does that have a name? The new product is sort of how to understand what's out there and what your apps are and just kind of the initial sort of assessment.
Yeah, so it's analytics, inventory kind of thing. So the big data types of things that we're going to try to approach for customers and help them understand, you know, what they've got and be able to understand it in ways that they don't have the instrumentation to do today. Because of where we sit in the data stream and the way we've approached problems in the past, we actually have access to a lot of this stuff, and our folks understand the world in that way. So it's less about collecting the data, and it's really about presentation of the data and being able to make it actionable and useful for business to make decisions about migrations, to make decisions about IT strategy, about security, about architecture, you know, whatever it's going to be. All that raw data is out there, and we're just going to present it for folks so that it becomes very, very actionable to make their business decisions.
That's almost a bigger business than Ion and Catalyst. Like, Ion and Catalyst are what get you on all the endpoints.
Right.
But now what you do with this data and the level of detail you have, I mean,
yeah, and so you're absolutely right. And, you know, one of the concerns that has popped up, and I want to try to get ahead of it, is, you know, this something that we are working on fidelity around for customers and the issues they've expressed of, you know, is there going to be personally identifiable information and who's going to hold it? And we're going to have the ability to control all of that stuff so that we meet various international regulations and you know, banking and HIPAA and all the other the regulatory controls around it. Because we can abstract all that stuff out and you can still get very, very useful data. But for those who want to drive further down, you know, we'll be able to do that as well. So look for announcements from us in the coming months. We're going to try to make some announcements no later than mid-year for what we're doing there.
All right, I'm taking notes, Brian. Exclusive access to
Absolutely.
New announcements.
Wait, so that's, you know, if we could swing it at BriForum in the UK in May.
That's fantastic. So there you are, and you guys will be there.
We will be.
And I know you're coming to our speaker dinner. And
yes, do I give you my order now? I wasn't really clear. Is that Gabe who takes that? I don't.
Whoa.
Yeah, so what you do is you tell me the beers you want, and I will get them for you and hold them
that
for you.
That kind of dinner.
Yeah, we just stand next to you and hold your beer all night. That's how that works.
So that's Matt Heller, one of the co-founders of Browseum. It's an hour and 15 minutes we've been talking, so it goes quick. But I really appreciate you taking the time and coming here in person. I know you're a DC area guy, right?
So. I am. I had to escape the snow. So it's very important.
It
I think
was
we,
like
5 inches of snow.
So it was 80s and sunny here yesterday, and it's fantastic. So, and today was a sponsored podcast by Browzoom, but thank you for coming on the show and sharing your story with us. I know that from my standpoint, I think I had a little bit of a legacy view, probably since we talked 3 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, and the company's evolved a lot since then, but it is what we're known for. It's what we're good at, and that's great. And then it opens the conversation for all these other pieces. And so one of the reasons we want to get out there with the bigger messages so that people understand what we've got.
Well, I appreciate you making the trip over. Thanks for your time and your sponsorship today. We will see you at Bri Forum. And so for those looking for more information, there's information in the program notes below the recording here. Of course, browzoom.com. And that's BROWSIUM.
Perfect.
.com.
Ding.
Yeah. All right. Well, Matt, thank you so much. Gabe, thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks to Mariah, our project manager, for Justin Meisinger, our engineer, and for San Francisco, this is Brian Madden. Thanks for listening.